Now.
What's up there, Sparky?
Blessed morning to you guys.
Blessed morning back at you, dog.
Captain Hawk.
Back in the day, I'm bending at U.S. Cellular Field. It's a day game. I'm miserable in the job. It's about 11 o'clock before a 1 o'clock game. So I'm in the seats. I'm asleep. I mean, I'm in full uniform. I'm dead to the world.
Rise and shining.
Wake up! That night on the 10 o'clock news, the ABC cameras caught me. And Gian Greco's first hit on the sports, like, look at this guy really doing his job. My privacy invaded there?
No.
No?
No.
Why not?
You're being paid not to be asleep.
If the Sox had seen that at that time, I probably would have been suspended.
Hey, water boy! You're fired!
If I got a picture of you during a break, picking your nose or whatever you do during the break,
right,
and I posted it on social media, really, how embarrassing would that be?
I'm good, but a lot of people would bother by that.
Clark, don't pick your nose in front of me, please.
But if you're on the job and I take a videotape of you sleeping when you're getting paid to work,
true,
picking your nose is no big deal.
I'm not picking, I'm scratching.
Everybody picks their nose, all right? Everybody picks their nose.
What, are you scratching your brain?
Yeah, because it's huge.
From the seventh floor of the Tribune Towers.
Boy, this has been tremendously tremendous.
In downtown
Chicago!
Come on, sucker.
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Let's get it on.
It's the Cap'n Haw Show.
Everyone has to do their job.
We're going to ball until we fall.
That's a shot and a beer.
Do your job.
That's the Hazleton way.
Let's begin now.
Yes!
Good morning. Happy Wednesday. Cap'n Haw here on another beautiful day in the city. Mark Carmen is in for Dave Kaplan. Another day on the Mark Carmen streak. It continues. Iron Man is back. And he's going to stay awake for an entire 3 hours today.
That's the goal. Thank you.
And if you don't stay awake, I will have video of you napping. And I will broadcast it live on social media.
Twitter, Facebook, and
wherever.
Instagram. You'll do the whole thing?
Yes, I will.
Do you do Instagram?
No.
Okay.
I should?
I think you should, yes.
Okay.
I don't either, but I think
there's
you should.
There's enough stuff out there, you know? I've got the Facebook link to the Twitter machine and this and that. And how many different outlets do you need for your self-indulgence?
A lot.
Okay?
Nowadays.
Really?
Insti is the big thing now, David.
Insti? And now is it Insti?
That's what the kids call it, yeah.
Okay.
Or Insta. I think it's Insta.
You don't even know. So don't stop trying to sound hip and cool. That's Mark Carmen in for Cap, as I said. Mike Jacobson, our executive producer, keeping us on the rails here. Matt Rooney, associate producer. And Pat Costell, our director. We will be here till noon on CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com. We've got a lot to talk about today. There's not a whole lot going on in the sports world, but we will talk about a lot of things that are compelling and happened last night at the All-Star Game. It was a... entertaining was overstating it, Carm. I think that there were times when I was watching that game last night that I felt I was watching it because out of a sense of duty rather than interest.
I know I was. That was full duty right there.
It was all duty.
Yes.
What did you think overall? What was your overall All-Star Game impressions? Because mine was, I don't think I came away with it from that experience feeling like that was the best baseball had to offer. And I was disappointed. I don't want to overstate that either. I was disappointed Chris Sale didn't pitch. And I thought that from a Chicago baseball standpoint, that was the one of the three reasons I was watching the game. The other two were in Cub uniforms. But Chris Sale, that sitting on the – and watching without getting into the game is baseball's loss.
Yeah, I want to know the reasoning, but it was reported widely that Ned Yost called Robin Ventura. They had a conversation. Chris Sale was going to pitch one inning.
He said so. He went on Mike and Mike on ESPN Radio, and he said he was going to pitch one inning.
Right.
What changed?
So what happened? And I would have liked to have seen Chris Sale out there, but if I was a White Sox fan worried about the future, like Rick Morrissey and I, the sky is falling type of guys in this city. There's many of us. I'm good that he didn't pitch. But as far as pure entertainment last night, it would have been more fun to see him out there. And then I was disappointed. You know, Rizzo came up, runner on third, one out.
How about that?
You know, rolls out to first and has to be bailed out by Johnny Peralta. Didn't enjoy that moment.
From a Cub fan perspective, having a Cardinal bail out a Cub, not a good thing.
Right, wanted to see the Cubby come through, and it didn't happen. And then Chris Bryant did have a sweet walk. I mean,
it was a sweet walk. It wasn't just any walk. He did it in a way where you just respected the way that he took that last ball, right?
I mean, he worked the count.
What's a sweet walk?
Well, he got it to 3-2, David, and then, it was a tight pitch.
It's an all-star game. You want him raking.
Yes, you do.
You want him hitting the ball, banging the wall. But you want to see that speed. You want to see him taking some big, heavy cuts. That's what you want.
That's all true, but there was some integrity in what he did. They were trailing 5-2 at the time.
He respected 90.
Yep, needed to get on base. Let's try to build the old comeback here. So I give Bryant credit for that. And, I was asleep by the time he flew out in right. I woke back up, but I missed the Bryant last at-bat, and it was not included in the MLB.com condensed game, so I haven't seen it.
Okay.
You're
honest.
I got to come clean.
So at least for people who weren't glued to their television sets last night, the American League beat the National League 6-3, so the Sox won't have home field advantage. Sox will have home field advantage in the World Series by virtue of the American League's victory in the All-Star game. Mike Trout was the first ever back-to-back most valuable player in the All-Star game. He homers in his first at-bat, the first time that's happened, I think, since Joe Morgan 38 years ago. That's a long time, and Mike Trout is worth the price of admission. He's worth your time anytime you get a chance to watch the Angels on television, which in the Midwest isn't very often.
Right.
And we said yesterday, if he played in New York or Boston, people would be sick to death of hearing about Mike Trout. But last night reminded you of what you're missing. And I love that. Who was it? Adam Jones called him the white Bo Jackson. In a way, that was meant to be very complimentary, and it summed up his overall athleticism that gets taken for granted. And this guy is just a natural baseball player. And is it overstating it, Carm, but to say that he showed last night why people regard him as the best player in the game?
Probably not, no. My most impressive moment with Trout last night wasn't the home run, it was the way he scored from second on the base hit. Guy's coming around. It just reminded me, dude, that man can run. And so you're talking about a guy with power, you're talking about a guy with speed, he's got it all.
And he beat out, a double play attempt?
Yeah.
And he talked about respecting 90, going hard and playing the game the right way. That he was doing all of those things, and a lot of times you don't get that in a young player, but Mike Trout brings everything. So there were some things to appreciate from last night. There was a lot of
the pregame was awesome.
The pregame was,
well, I know awesome might be a little bit strong.
Yeah, it's a little strong. It gets a little schmaltzy, and it gets a little bit, it feel like you're watching everything in slow motion. And I think that Fox has a way of ruining the moment sometimes for people that want to savor it. And I felt like there were some awkward moments in the pregame that didn't need to be. And I felt like they let things linger for a little bit longer, that one tick longer than necessary. Just let them happen. And the Pete Rose moment.
Yeah.
When they introduced the franchise four for the Reds.
He looks good. I'm sorry. Did I say that? That's wrong. That's terrible.
He's 74 years old.
Oh, well.
Has the guy not suffered enough? You got to mock him?
Well, guy needs to get on a treadmill. Let's be honest.
Come, he's 74 years old, Carm.
Well, you're never done. That is the third. He needs to stay committed. You're Pete Rose.
The ovation was 1 minute 24 seconds. I found it interesting to... I majored in body language at Ball State, so I found it interesting to see his interaction with a Joe Morgan, a Johnny Bench.
Yeah, what'd you think of that?
Chilly.
Right?
Chilly.
Yeah.
I didn't think that the players in each dugout were necessarily, I wouldn't call them kind of, I wouldn't call that undivided attention.
I would
call it distracted.
I'd call it uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable, not knowing how hard to clap if you're there.
You bet on
again,
baseball.
If the cameras are on, you want to be a little more respectful. Pete Rose himself, my overwhelming thought of watching him at that point was sadness. I felt like it was a sad moment watching that all unfold. Because here's a guy, 74 years old, who has done what he's done. It's been well documented, and we're not going to go over everything. But I don't know that he's ever really been honest with himself about how badly he has damaged his legacy, about how much responsibility he has yet to take for what he's done. I don't know that he's manned up, if you will, to all of the things in his past. And I felt like here he is, 74 years old. This is as good as it's ever going to get, perhaps, for a Pete Rose. This is his last moment to savor like this. And there was a tinge of sadness while you were making fun of how out of shape he was.
Well, it was on his
74.
It was on his face, exactly what you're talking about. And the other thing is, yeah, okay, you're banned from the game, and deservedly so, but you got to have this moment last night. I mean, you're on the field at the All-Star game in your hometown being honored. That should mean more to him than any plaque, or at least should be enough to cushion the blow that you're not going, that you haven't gotten to the Hall. That's a big moment to have.
We'll get back to Pete Rose because there's some other things about the Big Red Machine I'd like to talk about. 312-235-2525. 940, we're going to recap the All-Star game with the Phil Rogers, the baseball columnist from MLB.com. 1025, Ken Campbell from the Hockey News wrote a very interesting story about the Blackhawks' future, which will not include Johnny Oduya now that he has decided not to sign with the Blackhawks. That was the big news yesterday. We'll talk about that. Casey Johnson, our friend from the Chicago Tribune, covers the Bulls and covered the Bulls in Las Vegas. So you can interview Casey while I ask him how the family's doing, because I want no part of the Bulls hype from the summer league. But we'll talk about the Bulls with Casey at 10:55. You decide, Carm, at 11:10.
Yes.
And 11:25, you're here for a repeated performance of That's Whack, Bro. So big show today. Mark Carman is in for the Cap Man. Cap and Haw on CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com.
It's Cap and Haw.
There's a chance you might not be reinstated. There's a chance you might not ever get to the Hall of Fame.
Correct.
Will this night have been enough?
Oh, yeah, you got to, you know, I'm the one who screwed up, see? So I can't get mad at anybody why I'm not where I belong or why I did this or why I did that. But I'm just happy that he's willing to review my status. And when I sit down with him, I'll tell him everything I did as a player and as a manager, and we'll go from there. I'll be as honest as I can with him.
What do you think your chances are?
I'm not going to make any odds now. So, and we're not going to do that, Kenny. Get out of there. I don't know. I mean, you know, if he's a fair man, he's willing to give someone a second chance, I'll be the happiest guy in the world.
Get the ultimate experience with the all-new Samsung Curved 4K Ultra HD TV at Apt in Glenview. With the Samsung 4K Curved Ultra HD, you get the fastest internet and smart TV functions available. Come into Apt today to see the complete selection of Samsung electronics or call them at 847-544-2228 for complete satisfaction, free delivery, and a better experience. Shop Apt, pleasing people since 1936. That was the voice of Ken Rosenthal and Pete Rose during the All-Star game last night on Fox at American League 1-6-3. Pete Rose was introduced pregame to a 84-second ovation. Cap and Haw on CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com. Mark Carman in for the Cap Man. So what did you think of what Pete Rose had to say to Ken Rosenthal?
I appreciated what he said. He owned it. I was the one that put myself in this position. It's honest. It's not. He's not running away and hiding. So.
He's not now.
Yo, right, he did forever, but at least he's learned his lesson. Hey, man, you raise your hand up and say, I did this, I apologize, I was in the wrong place, I was messed up. Historically, we're going to – that's good enough. If Mark McGwire says he's sorry, if Barry Bonds stood up right now, if Sammy Sosa raised his hand and said, hey, I did this, his flag would be hanging at Wrigley Field probably 5 years later.
I do find it interesting sort of the – is there a double standard or is there a sliding scale of forgiveness? I mean, are we more forgiving to people who were PED cheats than we are to a guy that gambled on baseball? And I think that when you hear the venom in the voices of guys like the old school, the old guard, Tommy Lasorda's, and you hear them talk about Pete Rose, and they have dug in, and there's no give, and yet Tommy Lasorda, the Dodgers welcomed Mark McGwire into the organization. And Mark McGwire was as much of a cheated the game to every bit as much as Pete Rose did.
And he never really...
Wouldn't you say that?
I would. And he barely owned it. He would never really talk about it. I'm not talking about that.
I think that in both cases, you saw proud men that were very protective of the truth. And they didn't want to acknowledge the truth. And only grudgingly did Mark McGwire ever fully address it.
Right.
And yet the Dodgers organization, understandably, moved on, accepted him, employed him. Why is there such venom for a Pete Rose? I understand what he did, and I understand how wrong it was, and you violate a sacred rule in baseball. But I do find it interesting and baffling to a degree where this is the one thing where a lot of baseball fans are unforgiving. They'll forgive a lot of other things except for this.
Well, Cincinnati wants him in there, right? It seems like
it. I saw a lot of uncomfortable people in the stands last night. I did wonder that, Carm.
I mean, I guess
but I think so.
I guess there's probably the majority does, but there's
don't assume that though, because there's a lot of people outside Chicago would probably assume, well, the North Side wants Sammy Sosa back. And you know that there are Cub fans that don't care if they ever see him again at Clark and Addison.
Right.
So I wonder if there's that dynamic. But anyway, I thought that was one of the more compelling things about the pregame show, about the event itself. You'll remember this All-Star game for Mike Trout homering on the first at bat and for Pete Rose lumbering out of the dugout in a red blazer.
That
awkwardly.
And if you were still awake, Aroldis Chapman throwing 17,000 pitches above 100 miles an hour. Guy's a freak of nature. And
the DeGrominator. Was that a 10-pitch inning?
The DeGrom had the 10-pitch inning. That was fantastic.
Striking out the side.
What else did I
write? There were things to like. It wasn't like – I didn't enjoy it like in my 11-year-old boy enjoyment level, like I did when I used to reserve Tuesday night – of the All-Star game, do nothing else except for sit in front of the television and watch that. Last night was a little bit of a challenge.
I didn't write down a whole lot of things that I really enjoyed, to be honest. I had my notes. One thing I did enjoy was Mike Trout leading off with a home run and then going in and giving a high five to everybody and leaving Dale Swaim on the hook. The old Cub manager got nothing from Trout. Swaim was standing there. He was looking at him. Nothing. The Savoom got dogged by Trout.
Why do you think it was? Was it personal?
Oh, no, it was clearly an accident, but I was still kind of – I always love a guy with going with a high five and not getting one.
What did you think of Chris Bryant playing left field?
I thought that was interesting, too. Cubs are slightly reluctant to do that, perhaps, and don't want to irk him. Yeah, you're in there. You're going to left.
I think you're just happy to play anywhere
of
in
course.
An All-Star game.
Of course. But it was interesting that, yeah, you're getting in there, but go play left field.
But I wonder if that makes him – does that have any effect on his thought process in being willing or flexible in wanting to play the outfield for the Cubs?
Probably not. And I think he'll be flexible, right? I mean, he's going to do it.
I think he would do anything they'd ask.
Right. He's not going
to
love
it. What's the right thing to do? Where's the right place for him? He has struggled throwing the ball from third to first. Not so much fielding, not the glove action, although that's not stellar. But I find it I want to know if from a Cubs perspective, if they'd never tell us this. Who's further along defensively, Kyle Schwarber as a catcher or Chris Bryant as a third baseman?
They're not going to answer that, but I think the answer would be Chris Bryant.
And yet, look how shaky he's been.
Right. Well, if Schwarber was even an adequate catcher, you would think that with what he's hitting, he'd be here. But that guy's throwing out Byron Buxton. He threw a guy out in the Futures game. Don't want to make this about Kyle Schwarber,
we'll get to Cubs and Sox, because there's some Cubs and Sox things we need to get to in terms of the approach.
I'm ready for some Kyle Schwarber.
As the trade deadline comes up. There's also some things. We'll get to the phone lines, 312-235-2525. Jerry and Bob, we'll get to you when we come back. When I saw Pete Rose hug Johnny Bench, and I saw him, stand next to Joe Morgan. It brought me back to maybe 1978, 1970, the big red machine. And as a kid growing up, that was the first lineup that I memorized start to finish, every position, batting order. I could tell you last night every position of the big red machine. That was a team that I was a Cub fan growing up, but everybody knew every person who belonged to the Big Red Machine. What was that team for you? What was that team for anybody? The first lineup that they could remember as a baseball fan growing up that you knew when you looked at the box score exactly what order those names were going to appear. Cap it all, Mark Carmen in for the Capman. We'll get to that. We'll get to much more. We've got Phil Rogers coming up at 9:40 from MLB.com here on CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com. Cap and Hall.
This is the Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN+.
Here in his hometown from Western Hills High School in Cincinnati, please welcome Pete Rose.
Well, just walking out there with Bench and Morgan and, of course, Larkin, my only player to date that made the Hall of Fame that I managed, I brought him up. Some of the greats in the history of baseball. And, you know, this is the baseball capital of the world. I grew up here. Fans are great. You never know what to expect from fans. Good, bad, or indifferent, but they were great.
Pete Rose last night talking about the ovation he received at the All-Star Game in Cincinnati. Cap and Haw, CSN Chicago, WGNplus.com. Mark Carmen in for the Cap Man. Talking about the All-Star Game, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention how bad the hats were. They were awful.
I kind of liked them.
How could you like those things? Looked like they were passing a yard sale on the way to the game. They said, Rob Manfred said, hey, can you stop? Can you back up? He got out. He bought like, you know, 50, a bag of 50 hats for every team and put them on the heads of the All-Stars and went out and played. They were awful.
It was kind of like an old school Pirates hat. Is that fair?
Yeah,
like 79.
I tend to agree with 773 Texter. Those All Star Game hats were brutal.
I'm looking at it.
It had very
right
much it was softball like, team, you know, look to them.
I'd wear that hat. I'd legit go straight at a. I like all of them really.
I didn't think too much about.
I'm not a big hat guy, but
no,
like hat backward hat guy.
Backward hat guy?
That guy's a rough guy.
I thought the ovation before the game was interesting. I love the player introductions. And when the Reds crowd booed every Cardinal vociferously.
Great job.
It was a great job. How about they even booed Pujols out of just reflex because of the former Cardinal status that he enjoyed.
I respect everything they did as far as.
And by the way, he is a former Cardinal. Because Fox had him as a current Cardinal. Did you see that?
I didn't notice that. Does that happen?
The little bug or whatever you call that, the graphic that, for his team, they had Albert Pujols, and he's clearly in an Angels uniform, and they have Cardinals. Sorry, Joe Buck, that was wrong.
I hate to go back there, but it is pretty amazing. They let Albert Pujols go, and they continue to win. That's unbelievable.
And Adam Wainwright is hurt, and they continue to win.
How do they do it? How do they do it?
And Carpenter, and they win. They miss whoever, and they win.
If that was old school Cubs, they would have paid Pujols $40 million a year. Anything to keep.
Like the Angels did?
Yep. Well, yeah. The Angels got the money to do it.
Okay, before we get to the phones.
Yeah.
The big red machine. Tony Perez, Joe Morgan, Dave Concepcion, Pete Rose, George Foster. Who's the center fielder?
Oh, I no chance.
Come on. You don't know the big red machine? Oh, yeah, I guess. I see. That's where I'm older than you by just enough that I remember them and you don't.
Big red machine center field.
Geronimo.
I have no idea.
Cesar Geronimo had the best arm that you could imagine. And right field, Ken Griffey. Okay. Senior.
Wasn't he the leadoff?
Not junior.
He didn't lead off, Ken Griffey Sr.?
Well, you know what? The order, I have to go back. I'm just going by the positions because Tony Perez did not lead off. Johnny Bench behind the plate.
Right.
And I just remember that that team as a kid Cub fan, just thinking you were in awe of a team that won as often as they did, and you wondered why in the world the Cubs and Rick Monday couldn't win more often. Because those were the days of Rick Monday, Jose Cardenal. You know, the Cub, the late 70s Cubs.
The only thing I know about Rick Monday is that he was the guy that stopped the flag burning.
Oh, that was a beautiful, dramatic moment.
Yep.
That's one that stands out in the memory. He was. That was one of those things that he will. We're talking yesterday about Scott Podsednik. What will he be remembered for? 2005, the season he peaked and won a World Series. Rick Monday, the flag saver.
Dernier, Sandberg, Matthews, Durham, Moreland, Say, Jody Davis, Larry Boa.
There you go.
Your 84 Chicago
Cub
lineup.
And that's the first team that you sort of identified with?
Absolutely. Broke the heart, the whole deal. 11 years old. They were at, you know, they were day games, the playoff games.
Yeah.
They they had the games on in the cafeteria at Edgewood Junior High.
Well, that's a quality education right there.
It was about the best thing they did at Edgewood Junior High.
And you were hooked.
I was.
Favorite player off that team as a kid?
Rhino.
Easy, right?
Yeah, no, it was. Although everybody loved doing the Sarge. And
Sarge was compelling. I really liked Ryne Sandberg. Everyone tried to mimic the way that he just did everything at the play in the field.
Yeah, you try to have the level
so
swing.
So 84 Cubs is the one that you have memory. That's kind of an easy one. I guess the Big Red Machine is an easy one, too, because they were so good for so long. All right, let's get to the phones. 312-235-2525. Jerry in the West Loop's been holding for a while. Thanks for holding, Jerry. Welcome to Cap and Haw.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Pete Rose had 4,200 hits. Think about that for a moment. Nobody in the history of baseball, we're talking sports. We're not talking about personalities. I give you guys an example. I was just thinking, Herman, you said it. I owe you a dinner for this, man. Mark McGwire is a hitting coach for the Dodgers. I think they've been in the playoffs for the last 2 years. Mark McGwire was a hitting coach for the Cardinals that went to the World Series. So evidently he's a pretty good hitting coach. But remember, Mark McGwire and Canseco started this steroid type thing. We accuse all these other guys, but the guys that did it, especially McGwire, he's been working full-time, and I hear he gets paid pretty well. Going back to Pete Rose, see, we have double and triple standards. I'm 71 years old, man, so I want you to know I'm an old guy. My kids are your age, and I was sitting there watching you guys, and I was listening. I said, what is the problem with, the whole sports scene? You guys don't know the past. You don't go back and research it. You need to research the past and watch the future. I'm lucky that I've been on the earth for 70 years, so I've seen all these guys play, from George Mikan to Pete Rose to Sandy Koufax, Willie Mays. That was the most stunning. That brought tears to my eyes because I remember those guys.
Well, Jerry, though, I respect that, but I think that, I'm asking a question about why fans are holding this against Pete Rose more than they're holding things against Mark McGwire.
I don't think it's the fans. I think it's the media. The media plays it up. The fans follow the media. That's another thing I found about this generation. Nobody can tell. I'm a Vietnam vet. I got through the war because I fought for myself. People read the – if you read the Tribune, your article, you read the Sun-Times, you got different stories. I go listen to the other radio station on 670. They talk completely different views than you do. You got fans that listen to that that say, oh, yeah, this guy was this way. I heard a guy say the other day that Serena Williams might be on steroids. I'm talking about somebody in your business. And I say, my God, what an asinine statement, because she's winning at 33. Tim Duncan is still playing at 39. Jeter played at 40 years old. And I got some guys like Blanca. Brett Favre played. He was in his 40s. So what are you talking about? You got certain people that can train and keep themselves going. But the Pete Rose deal, getting back to it, the fans don't understand. Baseball knew what Pete Rose was doing. They knew the steroid era. And one of the most touching moments when they were showing each team, and they would show four players from each team in the history of baseball.
Yep.
When they flashed the scene of Barry Bonds, I had to call my son. He's an engineer. He's in the same age bracket as you guys. And I told him, I said, I'm shocked that they did that. I remember Barry Bonds at Pittsburgh. He weighed 180 pounds, won 3 MVPs.
Yeah.
Same way with Roger Clemens. Those guys, you can do whatever you want with them. You can say he took steroids or whatever. But those two guys were great before the steroid era. And you guys know that.
Yep.
Roger Clemens and
Thanks.
Barry Bonds. Thanks for your time,
Thanks,
guys.
Jerry. Good points. A lot of venting there about a generation that doesn't appreciate what was accomplished before us.
Well, first of all, Jerry needs to get his own show. He should get a podcast and start it up. I don't care that he's 71 years old. He should.
Jerry's good.
Jerry's
got some very strong opinions, and we're always glad when he shares them.
I've never seen anybody more all over the map. I mean, Serena Williams was just compared to Tim Duncan and Brett Favre.
His point was that I knew where he was going, though, with this. When you accuse Serena Williams blindly of being on steroids, and I don't know what he's referring to, so I don't know who I'm disparaging here, but you have to be very careful that you just don't make these kind of blatant comments when you do what we do, because you can throw around a lot of unfair accusations, a lot of inappropriate implications. You've got to be very careful that you don't do that. So I don't know the context, but I can tell you that his reference was that There are some people in sports that are just freaks of nature. And Tim Duncan playing at 39 at the level he's playing is one of those. Brett Favre playing as long as he did is another. So those were the examples he was referencing in relation to Serena Williams, who may be the greatest female athlete ever. Ever.
And she works incredibly hard, and maybe she I hope she hasn't done anything. There's a lot of rumors there, but there
are a lot of rumors everywhere. There's a rumor. Did you hear the rumor I heard about Carm this morning?
What was the rumor?
That you spilled coffee on your
true
shirt
rumor.
And you had to change.
True rumor.
That and then you had this other nice shirt on that you were sporting, and you spilled coffee on it because...
No, I just want to... This is the same shirt.
And then you dined and dashed from the cafeteria. That's what I heard. I just heard.
Did not dine and dash.
Okay.
Was allowed to go free.
There
was,
okay.
I was set free with an egg and a sausage and a nice coffee that I spilled on myself.
Bob in Glendale Heights, welcome to Cap and Haw. Morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, David. It's glad to have you back. And, Carm, it's glad to have you back. Hey, listen, Pete Rose should be in a Hall of Fame just because he gambled. Paul Hornung was a gambler in the NFL, and I believe he's a Hall of Famer. Michael Jordan is a gambler, and he's going to be in a Hall of
Careful,
Fame.
Careful, Bob. Careful, Bob.
Wait.
Didn't
wait,
gamble
David.
On the Bulls, Bob.
But still, Paul Hornung did. Hey, Carm, do you remember me when David Haw and David Campbell were on vacation and Jed Ladd and you were doing a show and I waited 2 hours and 45 minutes and you said, if this man is still on there, we should give him a Lou Malnati's pizza, and I was on there. And nobody gave me the pizza. And I'm still waiting for it. Come on, guys.
Bob, there's a guy that
you're... Honest to God, I'm 70 years old. It's like Paul Hornung gambled. And he's in the Hall of Fame. You said the Big Red Machine. I seen him. Pete Rose, without a doubt. Hey, man, he gambled. He admitted it. You got to put him in the Hall of Fame. He's a Hall of Famer. We all know that. Oh, he admitted to it. Now, Michael, listen, we all know Michael gambled on the golf course. He's a big-time gambler. Everybody knows it. He's a Hall of Famer. No one's going to criticize that.
Thanks, Bob. We're going to put you on hold
and
send it to Malnati's. So I don't know that the Michael Jordan – example is really apt because there's no proof that he bet on his own team.
Not even no one's ever even said he bet on basketball. That's
no,
not,
no, you
that's,
can't.
It's not relevant there. And I love Bob,
but I think that people have to, you know, remember how that this illustrates how polarizing the Pete Rose issue is. Some people believe he really belongs in the Hall of Fame, and some people are dead set against that idea.
If you polled the Hall of Famers, the current Hall of Famers, the living Hall of Famers, do you want Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame? Silent vote. I would bet strongly the answer to that is no. But those guys, you know, those are the same guys that kept Ron Santo out until he passed on and then put him in, which was just absolutely positively ridiculous.
You mentioned Ron Santo. He was one of the four players mentioned for the Cubs franchise, four: Ernie Banks, Ryne Sandberg, Ron Santo, and Billy Williams. The MLB unveiled yesterday the White Sox franchise four: Harold Baines, Paul Konerko, Minnie Minoso, and Frank Thomas. I don't know that this whole thing with the franchise four went off. It smacked of a huge popularity contest, and maybe that's all it was supposed to be. But when you have lists like this, you do invite debate. I don't like the Cubs and Sox list. They would not have been my four for each, and we'll get to those. We're going to talk to Phil Rogers first from MLB.com after we come back. But we want to get, who would your franchise four be for the Cubs and Sox? And did you agree with the one that MLB announced yesterday for those teams?
Sammy is in there for me. CSN Chicago is re-airing all 16 of the Chicago Blackhawks Stanley Cup wins. You can relive the thrilling Anaheim series. It starts at noon with Game 1. Visit csnchicago.com for complete listings. And then tonight, it's the Chicago Fire. They look to defend their home turf against the Columbus Crew on CSN. You can flip over to CSN Plus for the Spanish broadcast as well. That's the coverage tonight starting at 7. Friday, the premier inside look, Jim McMahon, 4:30, your guy, David Haw, 4:30 on Friday, Jim McMahon. Also Friday at 5, CSN Chicago for the 2015 Blackhawks convention opening ceremonies. Pat Boyle will have that for you. And then finally, Saturday, get to know Bears kicker Robbie Gould, the premier of Bears life. That's after White Sox
posted. That's your guy.
I do like a Robbie Gould. He messed up one of my demo tapes that I sent to the radio station in this town. I called him Robbie Gould. And then it was right when he started. Then I was
No excuse, Carm.
I was leaving messages for Adam Delavitt. Adam, listen, I know it's Gold. I'm sorry. I could say Gold. didn't work, didn't hire me. All right, Bears Life, post-game live. Thank you.
9 a.m. hour of Cap and Haw, sponsored by Apt Electronics. Mark Carmen in for the Cap Band. Cap and Haw, when you come back, Phil Rogers from MLB.com on Cap and Haw, CSN Chicago, and WGNplus.com.
It's Cap and Haw.
That's into right field. Pretty well hit. Back at the wall. Gone. A home run from Mike Trout. And in this ballpark where the baseball flies, Trout all smiles. AL leads 1-0.
Obviously, he came out with a W. That's the biggest thing. When I go out there, I play my hardest every day. And it doesn't matter what the score is. When I'm in there, I'm playing 9 innings hard, and it's just an incredible honor to be a part of the All-Star game and win the MVP twice. It's something special for sure.
The voice of Mike Trout, last night's All-Star game MVP, first time ever that a player has won back-to-back MVP honors at the All-Star game. Cap and Haw here on CSN Chicago. Mark Carmen is in for Dave Kaplan. I'm David Haw, and we're pleased to welcome into the show Phil Rogers, the fine columnist for MLB.com, who was in Cincinnati last night. His column is on MLB.com. He gives credit to Ned Yost, and Ned Yost deserves it because he, as Phil said, aced his All-Star game test. Good morning, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Doing well. Yeah, it was a game last night that I think from a Chicago perspective was not all that exciting because, from years at the Tribune, Phil, you look at these games and you wait to see how the Cubs players or Sox players will have an impact on the outcome, and that was nowhere to be found last night. So I guess to begin with, what was the explanation for not pitching Chris Sale from Ned Yost? Because we had mixed kind of signals throughout the day. At first, he said he's going to pitch an inning on Monday, I believe, and then all of a sudden, we didn't see anything from Sale.
Well, I do not believe that Ned specifically addressed that after the game. I didn't ask him. I'm not sure anybody else did. I think he always set back certain pitchers as emergency pitchers. I know Bruce Bochy talked about he had three Cardinals pitchers on his team and didn't use any of them. And he said he was saving Michael Wacha and Carlos Martinez for extra innings. And I think that was the same thing. And, I think Ned probably handled it right, given that the White Sox preferred Chris didn't pitch. I still don't really understand why the White Sox didn't just pitch Chris on Sunday instead of Saturday. If they didn't want him to pitch, he could have been an All-Star, but he would have been ineligible to pitch in the game, and he would have been replaced on the roster. It turned out it didn't matter. It's always fun to see him pitch, but in this case, given the start 2 days. 2 days before, the Saturday start was at Wrigley Field, his first time ever there. How amped up he was. He hit 100 miles per hour for the first time in his career. I can understand the White Sox concern, but I feel like if you go to an All-Star game, you ought to be able to play in a game.
Phil, let's talk about Chris Bryant playing some left field, and he did say, I'm reading your piece, that he was made aware that he may have to go or may be going to left, but didn't know for sure. And, of course, then he went out there, didn't have any chances in four innings. What's your sense if Joe Maddon came to him and said, hey, Chris, we want you to go play left field. We're going to bring up Javi Baez now that he's healthy and he's hitting 400 the last 3 weeks. I'm making up that scenario. It's just a possibility of something down the line. How do you think Brian would take it?
I think he would be 100% gung-ho to do it, and I expect Bryant to move between third base and the outfield at some point of his career. He has the skill set to do it, and it allows you to kind of create this three-player, two-position platoon. I'm not sure that they have all the right parts to do that now, but, you could see Schwarber potentially in the mix. Both Schwarber and Bryant in the lineup against right-handers with Schwarber playing left field. And then if you had a left-handed hitting third baseman, then Bryant goes out and plays left field and the other guy plays at third, I think that's going to happen. I think that's part of Chris Bryant's value. And I thought it was sort of cool. I asked Bryant before the game, well, did you take fly balls out there yesterday? Or, do you know how this part plays? And he could have cared less. I think he just knew that he could go out there and play the outfield. And, his college coach at San Diego, Rich Hill, told me back a little bit before the Cubs brought him up that he feels like Bryant could be a Gold Glove outfielder and an okay third baseman. But his college coach, who played him all over the field, really thinks the outfield is his best place.
Yeah, I think you have to give yourself credit too, Phil, because before the game you mentioned that on Twitter that Chris Bryant could be used as a pinch hitter and perhaps the outfield. And I have to say, when I saw that at the time, I'm thinking, okay, you've got a rookie third baseman in an All-Star game for the first time. He's going to play the outfield, really? What does he know, and who told him that? Because you were onto that early.
Well, I think if you took a step back and looked at the National League roster, you could kind of see it, because they had the hometown third baseman, Todd Frazier, and then they had him backed up by Nolan Arenado, who's probably been the Gold Glove winning third baseman in the National League. And, he's hit very well. So third base, it was going to be tough to get him in. And I think they wanted to play Bryant at the game. They, his Q rating, the Q factor, he's a guy that has it, and I think they wanted to show it. So they only had six outfielders on the roster, so I think it kind of made some sense when you look at the whole roster. But the only reason I was on it was I had a chance to talk to him before the game, and he didn't hear it from Bochy, but he heard it from somebody else with the National League team. Hey, don't be surprised if we play you in the outfield.
Talk with Phil Rogers from MLB.com, their columnist on Major League Baseball. Back to the Cubs, Phil, because I think it maybe relates to the whole Chris Bryant issue and how versatile he really is and how willing he is to be used in different roles. You tweeted during the game or just before that there's a much better chance that Javi Baez plays a role with the Cubs down the stretch rather than be traded, that he's closing in on his rehab assignment, and once his broken finger has healed, he could become the Cubs' second baseman, which gives them some options, or maybe he could become the Cubs' third baseman. I think it gives them some flexibility. You also broached the idea that he could replace Addison Russell in the lineup. If you get a Javi Baez to the point where he's healthy enough to be used, what are your expectations for him and for the Cubs in the second half?
Well, he's similar to Bryant in the versatility, and maybe even a little bit better, because the Cubs believe he would be a very good defensive shortstop. That's what they really took out of his time up last year, what they've seen in spring training. His instincts are off the charts. His hands are really good. The difference between him and Starlin Castro in taking a throw when a guy's stealing a base at second base, just being able to do those little quick things, I think they're very confident with Baez defensively anywhere in the infield. I was told he was very close to getting called up before he broke that finger. And if you go back, that's right before they wound up bringing Schwarber up to be the DH in those five games at American League Park, and before they wound up, Mike Baxter wound up on the roster for a long time. I think Baez, had he stayed healthy, would already be there. And, I think you would see a guy that's going to strike out way too much. But I think in AAA this year, he did show that he had had a little bit better approach. His strikeout per nine rate was down. His walks were up. I think you look at the Cubs team right now, they don't score as many runs as you think. Chris Bryant, as solid as his game has been, hasn't really been the power-hitting guy that he was advertised to be. And I just think Bryant's power, certainly if Addison Russell had a good first month but has fallen way off since then, it's just sort of options. And I think maybe what it does is, instead of going out and trying to trade for a Ben Zobrist or somebody like that, gives you an option inside your system to bring in another infielder and to be able to have multiple parts. And, you know, I could see them in September having a different lineup every day and using 10 or 11 guys in that mix, because one way or another, Schwarber is going to be in that mix. And I think one way or another, if he comes back like he was playing before, Baez will be in that mix.
What are you hearing on Jeff Samardzija, Phil?
I think it could go either way. I think people think he's setting himself up for disappointment in the free agent market in this offseason. I'm not sure that the value is going to be there that he has always thought the value would be. I'm not sure in the trade market, as a rental player, a guy that's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, I don't know if the White Sox get overwhelmed with what they can get in return. It, by no means will it be a repeat of the Cubs trade with Oakland when they leased Billy Beane and getting Russell and Billy McKinney. But I think Rick Hahn's going to have a tough decision to make in terms of, do I take the best offer I get when I would rather get more for him than whatever the best offer is, or do I ride this out and just see, you know, the American League is wide open. Kansas City is the only team in the American League that you can say is going to be a playoff team. And there are a lot of people I talked to. One talk at the All-Star game was the end of this Tigers run, out just how bad the Tigers could potentially be after the All-Star break. So, you know, I do think you have to kind of wait and see before you go breaking up the White Sox.
Phil, before we let you go, as you're returning from Cincinnati after a couple of days at the All-Star game, what will you remember most about this assignment this year?
Just how much an All-Star game means to a town. I mean, Cincinnati's not been my favorite place to go to over the years, but the Reds made it a really cool event, and it makes me think when, I don't know if 1919, if that can happen at Wrigley Field, because the National League's in this run, the next 3 years are National League cities after being in Cincinnati this year. So you may have to have an American League city or two before it can get to Wrigley Field in 2020 or 2021. But it's going to be such a cool event when it does make it to Wrigley Field, because you see how well it works now in Cincinnati. I mean, I was picturing the Home Run Derby at Wrigley Field with the balls sailing out onto the streets, banging off of the scoreboard. It's going to be 4 or 5 years until we get one in Chicago, but, man, is it going to be fun.
Phil, before you go, settle a debate here. We were talking before the show. Would you trade Javi Baez and Kyle Schwarber for Sonny Gray? And also, is Sammy in your franchise four for the Cubs? Is he one of the four guys?
I didn't vote for the franchise four, but I doubt he would have been in mine. I probably would make that trade. I love Sonny Gray. And, you know, I'm not sure Theo's going to be able to give up these young guys, but I'm surprised you weren't asking the Chris Sale question. I think the Cubs have the pieces to stack up high enough that the White Sox would have to say yes to a Chris Sale trade. But I don't think that happens, because then you just got that injury risk, and I don't think the team giving up all those young guys can keep stacking them that high when they picture the Tommy John surgery coming.
Good stuff, Phil. Appreciate it. Appreciate your work in Cincinnati. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Phil. Phil Rogers from MLB.com, the baseball columnist, throwing out some compelling possibilities, and you did gasp when he said Chris Sale.
Can you imagine?
No, I can't imagine. I can't imagine the White Sox trading Chris Sale.
If the White Sox traded Chris Sale for some form of Kyle Schwarber, Javi Baez, Addison Russell, and, I don't know, throwing Pierce Johnson or whoever, that would be the biggest blockbuster this city's ever seen.
I would not disagree with that. I would find it very...
It will never
hard
happen.
To imagine the Sox trading Chris Sale at all, let alone to the Cubs in a city where they could regret that move for the next decade
or,
and beyond. and beyond.
Or fleece them and just roll south side. No sense.
Now you're talking like a Sox fan. And we got to get back to this whole Schwarber and Javi Baez for Sonny Gray idea.
Rodgers with Carmen. Feels good.
All right. 25-year-old pitcher Sonny Gray for the A's. 10-3, 204 ERA. A lot of other metrics in his favor. But you're going to give up two guys that are going to be a big part of your future if you are the Cubs. We'll get to the Cubs thoughts. We'll get to the franchise four. Got to take a break. Mark Carmen in for the Cap, man. Cap and Haw on CSN Chicago.